I'm suiting up!
Welcome to Dr. 3, a Hearthstone podcast dedicated to giving you explosive growth in climbing the standard rank ladder. I'm your host, Daring Alkaline, and along with me are my fellow hosts, Nikolaius and Major Death. Welcome back, guys, to week 3. So, as is our tradition, we're going to start off the episode talking about last week's poll question. Mage?
I really like this poll question, and we didn't get as many responses this week. 15 responses. What is your preferred play style playing Druid? And it was ridiculous. We had an even 33-33-33. Five people said minion swarm deck. 33. Five people said big minions, taunt, or Jade Druid. And five people said OTK. Aviana, Togwaggle, Malagros. So really, we hit all the cool play styles that everybody likes to play with the class. So
yeah,
I think we did a good job then.
I think it goes to show that the Druid class is quite varied in how it can play its decks. It has many different appeals to many different people.
That's very true. There's a play style that hits everybody, it seems.
Oh yeah, for sure. It's if you just want to go straight up aggro, or you want to do the wonkiest combo you can come up with, Druid probably has a place for you.
It also kind of maybe speaks to the tools that Druid has available to it. Unlike the class that we're going to talk a little bit about later, that's kind of maybe more focused towards aggression, both with their hero power and some of their cards. Druid has kind of this a lot of different options and a lot of different ways they can go with the cards that they had available to them. And it maybe also speaks to the choose one mechanic as well and the versatility that's available there.
Oh yeah, for sure. I think Druid just screams of versatility, and I like that, you know, you can pretty much do what you want with it. So it's a very cool class. So, moving on, we don't have any new revealed cards for Savers of Uldum yet this week, but we're going to talk a little bit about the Fire Festival of Evil. Mage, did you want to go into that?
So, there is a brand announced today, actually. There's a 3-week event starting July 10th and going through the 31st. And a part of this is there's 3 new tavern brawls where you're going to be able to the first week is basically, it sounds like a solo adventure where you're basically playing like the solo adventure, and you can actually earn Saviors of Uldum card packs. You can get the Ragnaros card back that was given out a long time ago. I don't have that particular card back. And then once you beat it, it seems like there's also timed runs, and if you can beat it in under an hour, you can actually earn a gold card, a gold bronze herald, and then under 40 minutes you get a gold recurring villain, which it's really interesting that they're not only tying rewards to just beating it, but beating it in a time frame to actually get to get some gold cards too.
I think that's super interesting. That's a new mechanic to the solo adventure, because you've always just had regular or hard, and now it's kind of cool to be like, well, how fast can you do this? Because they've done that in the past too with you know, just like for the casters, you know, when they had like dungeon runs, and like they did those big contests for the dungeon run back in the day. So it's kind of cool that everyone could potentially pull some rewards from being a quick player.
Yeah, so there's 2 more tavern brawls, one on the 17th that also looks like it's an adventure style. But you have a new playable hero for that particular brawl. You can earn another pack for the new expansion, as well as a beating all 8 bosses that time gets you a free golden Rafam scheme card. And then on the 24th, the final one is a player versus player tavern brawl. And the reward is getting a Saviors of Old Doom card pack the first time you win. The cool thing, in addition to all this going on, is as you're beating these bosses, you're working as a community towards revealing cards for the new expansion. So apparently 25 million bosses getting killed during these events, during these brawls, will unlock a 3 cards and a legendary card. So depending on how close to that 25 million we get, at 25% we get 1 card, 50 another, 75 a third, and then if we get the 100, we'll get all 4 of the cards revealed. So that's pretty interesting. There's a special fireside gathering going on as well, and then special quests for the first 7 days that are supposed to be apparently either card packs or hefty sums of gold, it says. So.
Yeah, they usually double the gold throughout the Fire Festival, right? If I remember that from the past couple years, because it's right before a new set launches, and it's always a good feeling to have, you know, what was a 50 gold quest be 100 gold quest, and you really are just, like, racking up the gold before the new set launches, and I remember this well now, because after you said this, the Fire Festival, I was like, oh, yeah. Because it always was like, oh, this gives me like an extra 2,000 gold before we go into the new set. So it is a very worthwhile thing to keep up on your dailies during the Fire Festival.
Yeah, we had it called some Toki's Time thing last year was around this time, but 2 years ago, the last time they actually branded it at the Fire Festival, we had the bonus gold, and so I'm glad to see they brought it back. I was hoping that they would bring it back. It's a nice little extra boost to help you get a little bit more in your war chest going into the new expansion. So,
oh yeah, it's definitely worthwhile. Okay, well
Are you guys excited about trying these the solo adventure as a tavern brawl to try and earn gold cards and a card back?
I mean, go ahead.
I'm a completionist, so I'm gonna get it done. I'm gonna get everything done. I'm gonna do the time trials, even if it kills me. So
I'm gonna spend a lot of time that week, I think, trying to get those 2 gold cards.
Yeah, I think likely I will try and complete it myself as well, depending. I still try and focus more on ladder, but it's always good to get the... I generally try and get the rewards. If they're giving out free stuff, extra dust doesn't hurt before a new set comes out either. So, all right. Well, that's going to wrap us up with the news. So this week we are talking about the class of Hunter. Mage, do you wanna run us through quickly the Hearthstone developer insight on the class of Hunter?
Sure, definitely. So they talked about ferocity, wit, and an army of beasts to go along with destroying your competition. I don't know if I necessarily think about ferocity and wit, but I definitely think about armies of beasts. Mm-hmm. Talk about lack of defense, aggression. That hero power just speaks to the aggression they have. And a well-timed Seeker to Death Rattle can help get them the clutch advantage. So the strengths are beasts. Face damage, secrets, and death rattles. Weaknesses are healing. They don't get much in the way of healing, specifically in their class. And then limitations. This is... Unlike some of the other classes, this is something they might have from time to time, but it's not something they think of as core to the class. And that's card draw and generation, board clears, and taunt.
Okay, yeah, I can see that. I mean, Master's Call is going to eventually rotate out. So, but if you're not playing a Beast Hunter, then yeah, your card draw is kind of limited in Hunter, so I agree with those for the most part, unless you have, you know, the only board clears you usually have is if you're fighting like a token deck and you have Explosive Trap, like,
yeah, that'll Explosive clear. Trap or Unleash the Hounds. That's true. That was, you know, it's weak, but it can do in a pinch and stuff.
Exactly. So there are circumstances where they can benefit from the wide board. So, okay, so let's move into our first deck type, which has nothing to do with Beast, and that would be Bomb Hunter. Nikolai, you want to kind of run us down on Bomb Hunter, what their game plan is, some of their key cards?
Yeah, so right now there's two kind of ways to play Mech Hunter. There is playing the bombs and there's playing the Death Rattle slow. So the Death Rattle typically involves Oblivitron, and that style has kind of faded. It's not super popular right now because its biggest target is Warrior, but Bomb Hunter itself just does a fine job of it as well, while also having a better matchup spread. So there's not much of a reason to run the slow Mech Hunter decks. So Bomb Hunter is the one we're focusing on. And the big cards in there, you're talking about Galvanizer, you're talking about Snip Snap, you're talking about Explodinator, you're talking about War Gear. Some of them include Boommaster Flark. And then it also has the Venomizer Missile Launcher combo to make sure that unless you can clear it or silence it, no other minion is going to survive on the board, because it will just deal one damage to everything, and that one damage has poisonous.
It's a tough spot if you can't get out of that Venomizer Missile Launcher combo's way, and especially if they galvanize both pieces of it.
Yeah. So its game plan is to generate a couple mechs on the board, usually with Explodinator, attach War Gear, attach some other mechs onto it via Magnetize, and hit you in the face.
Over and over again.
It's not a hard concept, but it is kind of tricky sometimes when you see a minion with Magnetize on it. There are some matchups where it's better to Magnetize onto the minion and just go face, or sometimes it's better to have them as two separate minions and fight for the board a bit more. So knowing when to do that is the big part of that deck.
That was definitely a part that I kind of struggle with a little bit, is I tend to overtrade, and so one of the things you need to be more aggressive. It's almost they're more scared of you than you should be of them sort of thing, because of the amount of damage those bombs can do in addition to what you can magnetize on them, right? Because you're making them even more difficult to deal with when you magnetize on the bombs.
Yeah, the amount of face damage it can do very quickly, because it has essentially every minion that has magnetize on it essentially has charge. So you're able to do a lot more damage than most other decks can as quickly. So if you go on, play a Galvanizer on turn 4 and they don't clear one of the Goblin Bombs, you can charge in that War Gear that you have in your hand while having a 5-7 on the board that when it dies also deals 2 more damage. Couple this with your hero power, couple this with typically Leroy Jenkins or Boommaster Flark to generate more Goblin Bombs. The damage can pile up very quickly. And because they're all mechs, they do very, very well against Warrior. Mm-hmm. Having Dynomatic be useless is a huge boon to it, as well as the fact that Warrior deals with reacting to boards, stopping you from being able to deal damage after you play a minion. With the minions having charge, it doesn't have the ability to react to it. So you're just taking that damage right away.
So, what would you say the Bomb Mech Hunter's strongest matchups are?
It's absolutely Warrior. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Like I said, it has most of its healing is in the form of its hero power and Ziliax in Shield Block, which is fine, but it's super slow. It's mm-hmm. not able to fight for the board very efficiently. It's very easy for the Bomb Hunter to have a mech stick, magnetize a couple mechs onto it, and go face. And if the Warrior doesn't have the perfect removal for that situation, and then probably two or three more removals, they're going to take a lot of damage very quickly, and then it's an easy, you know, Leeroy finish.
So the interesting thing I think about this deck is that it is almost entirely neutral cards, and but yet what really makes the deck go is the fact that it's got the Venomizer that is a hunter card, and then Ursatron, the other really important card in this deck, 3 mana that when it dies, it draws you another mech from your deck. And that, because that deck, it usually does run tracking, but you don't really have any other card draw in the deck outside of that. So that being able to pull some additional mechs out and that sort of thing is really important.
Absolutely. Turn 3, Ursatron into turn 4, Fireworks Technician is almost game winning in of itself, depending on which deck you're facing up against. So
what would you say the weak matches are for a Bomb Hunter?
Anything that can efficiently deal with large minions. So we're pretty much looking at Rogue, and you can look at Mage as well in some respects. They don't have as good healing. Neither does Rogue, but the ability for those decks to very efficiently deal with a large magnetized minion with Zap by freezing it. Rogue can just go backstab SI and dagger, and you know that clears up to 3 minions as well. So the decks that can efficiently deal with the mechs when they're small, when they haven't been magnetized, and then those that can also deal with them when they have been magnetized.
Decks that get on the board too, like Murloc Shaman, can actually be especially difficult when they can go wide quickly before it, like if you have a bad draw where you don't get the Galvanizer maybe and you like you don't have a card until turn 3, if you get two or three turns where the Murloc Shaman gets to go first and can put a bunch of minions on the board, it can start to be really difficult for the hunter to climb back into that game.
Yeah, absolutely. It is an aggressive deck, so decks that are also aggressive and faster than it tend to win those matchups. There's not a lot that it can do against a Bloodlust, for example, if the shaman has 3 or 4 minions up. And then also it struggles against decks that can outheal it. There aren't that many right now, but you could point to Control Shaman having Witch's Brew, Walking Fountains, Hexes, and Earthshocks to be able to efficiently deal with large mechs while also healing. And they also have Lightning Storm and Hagatha Scheme for the larger boards. And then you can kind of look at Mid-Range Hunter with Vicious Scalehide and Dire Frenzy to give you that kind of healing while keeping up that board presence, and then Deadly Shot for when they have that one big mech. So those were two other ways that you can kind of deal with it. Speaking of Mid-Range Hunter,
that's what we're going to be talking about next. So
I love these transitions.
So you want to go in and give...
Professional, just professional.
Exactly, we got this down. So you want to go into the core strategy and some of the most core cards to the Mid-Range Beast Hunter?
Yeah, I mean, the reason why the deck is how it is Master Skull. Mm-hmm. It is the best card draw that Hunter has ever received, outside of pre-nerf Unleash the Hounds and what was it? The
Undertaker?
Scavenging Vulture or something?
Oh, Scavenging Vulture. Yeah.
I don't know if that's what it's called.
Starving Vulture.
Starving Vulture. There we go. It used to cost like 3 mana or something. 2 or 3 mana.
I wasn't even around at that time, but it sounds like
It was 2 mana for the Vulture. I think it was a 2-1. And then Unleash the Hounds for 3 mana. So you had a 5 mana, summon a bunch of 1-1s. And then also draw a ton of cards. So once that got nerfed to 5 mana and has not seen play since, Hunter has struggled with card draw. So this is a 3 mana draw 3, which is extremely efficient, even if it does have that condition of them having to be beasts, we've seen this work. So the key cards are the beasts that you'd be drawing. So Dire Wolf, Vicious Scalehide, Scavenging Hyena, Tundra Rhino are all very, very important cards when it comes to the draw mechanics. And then Dire Frenzy being able to not only buff one of those minions, but then shuffle more buffed copies into the deck can allow you to do ridiculous things. It can allow you to heal for a butt ton with the Vicious Scalehides. It can allow you to do some insane OTKs with the Dire Wolves against Warriors. It can add more survivability. And then the other big card is Zul'jin.
A hero recasting, card, you say.
A hero card is good, a core card. You say. Go figure. Being able to recast every single one of your spells, which Midrange Hunter has a lot of, you typically, even if you have like one or two cards in your hand, by the end of Zul'jin, you probably have a full hand and a full board. It's kind of like Yogg, but not. I think Yogg was better than Zul'jin, but having a Yogg-like effect of being able to clear a board, generate your own board, and then draw a bunch of cards. Yeah, I'd take that for 10 mana.
Oh, yeah. And then your opponent has to answer that board, especially if you've played Call of the Wild, or,
is that Unleash it? The Beast.
Unleash the Beast. I'm sorry. I'm not on fire tonight. Unleash the Beast. And so you could potentially have multiple rushing 5/5s, and the first one adds an additional Unleash the Beast to your hand because of Twin Spell.
Yeah. So,
and there's still things like Scavenging Hyena, the Spring Paws are still there, which are, you know, always a good way to buff up your Hyena, and you can go really taunt a Scavenging Hyena real quick too. So that's, I mean, I feel like that's always still potentially an option there.
Yeah. Before we get into Secret Hunter, I do want to talk a little bit about the classic and basic set of Hunter, because it is one of the strongest in the game. And this is why Hunter has, it's had its ups and downs, but it can pretty reliably go face. It has a set of really core cards that you can build around. So Tracking is one of the best cards in the game. And there's a pretty clear differentiation between like the good players of Hearthstone and the not so good players of Hearthstone. And it's what their opinion is on Tracking. Like the new players and people who are like rank 20 to rank 15, they typically think that Tracking is a bad card. Once you understand that Tracking is a good card and your mindset starts to shift, you know, it's a different way of thinking. Tracking is amazing. It is one of the best cards in the game.
So tell me real quickly, the 60 second pitch, why is Tracking good? If I'm the rank 20 player and exactly. I'm saying Tracking is bad, I just gave away two cards and I didn't get any, you know,
I wanted all three of those cards.
I wanted all three of those cards. Yeah, all three of those cards are important.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. Okay. So one mana draw one is fantastic, right? I think we can agree. One mana draw one is fantastic. One mana selective draw one is even better. These are three cards that you put in your deck by choice, and you get to pick which one of those cards is the best for you in the current situation. Yes, you discard the other two cards. Do you know how often that matters? Almost zero, because the only time that it matters is if you go to fatigue. That's it. Unless you are going to fatigue, you can just say those two cards were at the bottom of your deck, because it does not matter. They do not have any influence on the game state. So you need to get rid of the idea that discarding cards are a problem, because it's not a problem unless you go to fatigue. Because if you're in that mindset and you end the game on like turn 6, you've discarded 20 cards because you're not playing those 20 cards because they're still in your deck. Like, those cards did not matter. So being able to look at your look at three cards in your deck, decide which one is best for your situation, and potentially throw away cards that were good in the early game but have no impact in the late game. Like, who wants a Mekaru on turn six as Bomb Hunter? No one. You do not get rid of that Mekaru. That is a dead draw. Give me this Warrior Gear. Give me the Snip Snap. Give me the Zilliax if I'm dying. So yeah, it's a one mana selective draw with essentially zero downside unless you get to fatigue.
And then most of the time you're not building your deck for fatigue. So
no,
why,
you're Hunter.
Yeah, exactly. Why do you get, like? Yeah, sometimes you
Hunter's
get to
not fatigue. Trying to get to fatigue all the time.
Exactly. Guy? Not very often. Not since Rex Deathstalker Rexxar rotated out. So
yeah,
the biggest thing there, the biggest click in my head when it came to tracking was know what you want from tracking before you tracking. So if there's yes. like the best use of it, like say in the mid range deck, is when you're looking for that final piece of damage, either the kill command or maybe the Eagle Horn bow, or that, you know, in the mech package when you're looking for the missile launcher to go with the Venomizer that you have in hand because you need the board clear. Those are the times where tracking really matters and when you can and where it really shines, like you're talking about.
And I've been playing Hearthstone for a while, and I kind of have on and off been playing Magic the Gathering Arena, and you realize how good tracking is when you look at the scry mechanic, when you're like, I get to look at the top card of my deck and decide if I want to put it at the bottom of my deck. It's the same concept, except for you get that with three and you get to draw that card immediately for one mana. So
exactly.
Like it's insane, because like the point that really drives it home, what you said, Nikolaus, is these are cards you put in your deck. You put them there to do your game plan. So being able to access the one you want and discarding two other ones, you weren't going to draw three cards this turn anyways. So this kind of puts you in a position where you can make better decisions, or it can put you over the edge to end the game. So, yeah, tracking's just a nutso card.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was the 3-minute pitch. But
okay.
Where is it? Where? What else were you going to highlight from the classic set?
They have two of the best 3-mana cards in Animal Companion and Kill Command.
Mm-hmm.
Animal Companion gives you an overstatted 3 drop. The downside is it's random. Upside is 33% of the time you get Huffer.
Unless you're my opponent.
You
unless you're my opponent, and then it's 100% yes. of the time.
Yes, 100% of the time your opponent gets Huffer, but you get it 33% of the time. So, I mean, it is what it is. And then Kill Command is what allows aggressive Hunter decks to essentially function along with their hero power. Having that extra 10 damage with two Kill Commands just in your deck that you might want to be tracking for is a ton of damage that you can end the game very quickly. You know, you couple that with Leroy Jenkins, that's three cards that deal 16 damage.
Yeah.
That's a couple.
That does two? That seems pretty good.
Yeah. Like, it's not hard to see how this damage can stack up very quickly. And then it also just has, you know, strong cards in Houndmaster, which isn't seeing play right now, but has been historically a very, very strong card. Savannah Highmane, we used to call it the only deck that has the only legendary that you can run two of because of how good it was. Eaglehorn Bow, 3-mana, 3/2 in secret decks, it's absolutely insane. You know, Unleash the Hounds having a 1/1. Like, think about how insane Spreading Plague was. And then we have Unleash the Hounds, which is classic, which is nowhere near as good, but is also half the mana and can go phase. So exactly. Hunter has one of the best basic and classic sets in the game. and that gives them a huge leg up every time there's a rotation. And they haven't always been that great when it comes to six sets, but we saw in Rascon's Rumble how just absolutely insane mid-range Hunter was after the nerfs happened.
Oh yeah,
it was pretty much everywhere.
Oh yeah, it was nasty.
Yeah. And then, so I'll go jump into Secret Hunter from here, because that uses almost exclusively, you know, these basic and classic sets, along with the secrets, which Hunter has quite a few of in their set. They have the Explosive Trap, Freezing Trap, Snipe, Misdirection, Snake Trap. All of those are classic cards. You draw them with Subject 9. You also run the Rat Trap. You run the Secret Keeper, which is a classic card.
It's one of the core cards of that deck.
Yeah.
It's pretty much the most ideal one drop. You run Secret Plan, one mana, Discover a Secret.
Yep.
So, that's always...
There's a, was it Mass Contender, 3 mana, 2/4? If you control a secret, play another one from your deck, which is quite insane. So... There's quite a few ways, there are quite a few different ways to play Hunter right now. It's not always the case. Most of the time, they just tend to gravitate towards the aggressive style, but they have the tools right now and have historically actually been able to have a couple different ways to play. So I don't think it's definitely as varied up as the Druid classes, because that way it had like completely different game plans.
Oh yeah,
this is kind of wanting to go face just in slightly different ways.
I'd say that's very fair. It's ultimate, I mean, with the hero power, it's kind of guiding you where to go, because you can't control that 2 damage. It's always going, you push that button, that arrow is hit in face, so kind of guides you for 2 mana, 2 damage to face every turn. So it's kind of nudging you in that direction always.
Yeah, I find it interesting that in the developer's insight, they said that Death Rattle was one of their strengths.
Mm-hmm.
They had been pushing Death Rattle Hunter for so, so long. And it had only been like a thing in like the past year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, it was really good in Rascon's Rumble, and I want to say it was good in the Boomsday Project.
It was good in the Boomsday Project because it beat Odd Warrior.
Yeah.
So, and there was a lot of Odd Warrior, so it did better fatigue game plan than Warrior, because you could just keep presenting huge threats that you run out of removal for. With Warrior at that point in time.
Yeah, so
it leveraged Carnivorous Cube probably as good or better than any other class because of the cards that were available that have since rotated, things like Play Dead and that sort of thing that allowed you to trigger Death Rattles while still keeping the minion alive and then getting the additional Death Rattles off of it.
Yeah, we've had Death Rattle Hunter before, but I think it's interesting that they put that as a strength when there is no Death Rattles outside of
Spider Bomb.
No, sorry, outside of Savannah High Main in the Classic and Basic set.
Oh, yeah, in the Classic Basic, yep.
Like, that's it. It's just Savannah High Main. And there's no ways to activate it at all in the Classic Basic set. So... It's weird to me that they would say that's a strength, but maybe that just means we'll be seeing more of that. But
yeah, in order for it to actually be a strength, then it has to be supported within the expansions, because what you're saying is there really isn't any support for it in the Classic/Basic set. So
yeah, so right now all we have is the Fireworks Technician, which is only run in the Bomb Hunter, because it only works with mechs, and then we have the 9 lives, which doesn't really see any play. Sometimes you discover it off Shimmerfly, but like that doesn't see much. It was also run in the very slower, like the Oblivitron Hunters. But like I said, those decks aren't seeing a lot of play. And then Oblivitron itself has like another mech activator thing. But we're not seeing a lot of ways to activate Death Rattles outside of mechs, and those are fairly limited. Yeah. So, like I said, I just thought it was kind of weird.
Yeah, there's minions with Death Rattles, but there isn't support right now the way there was support for, like, during Knights of the Frozen Throne and through last year's sets.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So you kind of always have to, if you want that to be a thing, you always have to kind of add it in, which, I mean, they've done. I mean, they put Feign Death back in, was it Trial or after Gnomes vs. Goblins?
Yeah, I think it was GVG. Like,
oh, was it GVG? Yeah, I couldn't remember. It wasn't
like really it was around for a very long time.
Yeah.
And then there was that 3-mana 3/3 that they put in on Goro.
Yeah.
And they followed it up with the playdead. Like, they've pushed, but even before that, it feels like it's something that they've constantly tried to push, but it only really became a thing when you had all of those effects, plus the Carnivorous Cube, plus Deathstalker Rexxar. Like, it felt like there was a lot that had to line up to make it worth running. And even then, even in Rauskas Rumble, it wasn't the best way to play Hunter. It was one of the best. It was, like, Death Rattle Hunter was maybe one, like, top three decks. But the best deck was Midrange Hunter.
Oh, yeah, so. For sure. And it took...
There was a while where I think Death Rattle Hunter was the best, and then it got usurped by Midrange near the end of its run there. I think Rastakhan actually switched it the other way, but I think during the Boomsday project and maybe through Witchwood, I think the Death Rattle Hunter, you know, when Kathrina Winterwisp was still available as well, there was a couple different ways you could even play it. You could do it with the 7-mana 3/3 that when it died pulled an 8-drop from your deck and into play.
Oh, that was a Recruit Hunter, yeah.
So there was a Recruit Hunter, I guess, as well. So,
yeah, and I mean, Death Rattles are a little bit less interesting when you don't have Carnivorous Cube, the most busted card they've ever printed for general.
I argue that it is the most busted card they've never nerfed.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. I think you're right. That card needed a nerf and it never got one. I don't know what they would have done to it, but...
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, exactly. We could have a whole episode ranting about Carnivorous Cube if we wanted to.
The other thing I like about Hunter is their decks notoriously are very inexpensive to craft, and so they're very easy to get into as well. I mean, you talked about Savannah Hymen. It's a rare, and you can put two of them in your deck. And for the longest time, I have a free-to-play account, and I have like almost 300 wins with Hunter and probably about 50 with everybody else, because the cards that it seems like they have available to them, just classic basic cards like you're talking about, and then if you just mix in a little bit of whatever the current expansion is, you can get a ladder viable deck that can get you to rank 15 to 10, even as high as 5 or possibly legend, depending on how good a player you are. And so I feel like it's a deck that I didn't necessarily get into right away, or the class that I got into right away, but it's definitely one that was, once I started messing around with it, that definitely ended up being quite rewarding when you have a very limited budget.
Yeah,
it's a very newcomer-friendly class, for sure, as opposed to something like Rogue, which is very much not so.
Yeah, Hunter's game plan's generally very linear and easy to understand. And I know when I started playing Hearthstone, one of the first decks that one of my friends built for me was Face Hunter. So it's simple to understand. Put the minions on the board, go face, kill your opponent quick.
Hit the button, it never misses.
Yeah. I believe it also has the highest, I don't know if it's changed, but it did at one point have the highest win rate deck in Hearthstone ever, which was Undertaker Hunter. And that was disgusting. I am glad that was like nerfed like 9 months later, like back when Hearthstone just didn't nerf cards. But yeah, like that go phase strategy has been effective since essentially day one.
Yeah. If you can put in enough damage fast enough and reduce your opponent's life to zero, you will win.
And then the tracking cards didn't matter.
Exactly, 100%.
Bring it back full circle.
Okay, I think this is a good place to wrap it up. So, Mage, you want to tell us about this week's poll question?
Okay, so for this week's poll question, Hunter-based, because that's the class we're talking about. You talked specifically about the how good the classic and basic cards are. I want to talk about what is the most powerful card Hunter has available in Standard right now that's not seeing play. Now, we talked about most of them during this. They're classic and basic cards. The first one we'll say Savannah Jaime, and the 6-mana Death Rattle, get a couple extra 2/2s on the board. That was in mid-range Hunter for a long time, and it seems like it can find its way back at any point. The original Houndmaster, the original 4-mana, 4/3, buff a beast, +2/+2, and give it taunt. Very good card. Definitely on a budget, I think it's a common card, and so it's
a basic, so it's free.
Yeah, okay, basic, so it's free. So it's a card that you unlock and then have it available to you. And then the final one is a legendary that was seeing a ton of play until Master's Call showed up, and it is the other Houndmaster, Houndmaster Shaw. 4-mana, 3/6, give your minions rush. Now, we've talked about how impactful rush can be. Being able to play minions and be able to impact the board immediately with them. That card was a kill on sight card for a very long time, and it just astounds me that it doesn't see more play now. But what do you guys think? What do you think is the most powerful card not seeing play right now in Hunter?
I mean, my vote is going to be for Savannah High Main. I think it's a big body and it's sticky. So basically, the likelihood of you getting damage in with it is very high. And at that point in the game, there's two beasts that come out of it, so you can still kill command. You can do another 4 damage. It's enough to close the game. So I think it's got to be Savannah High Main, in my personal opinion.
I think Savannah High Main is very strong. But if there was one card I wish I could be playing in Hunter right now, it would be Houndmaster. I would love that card to be able to see play in mid-range Hunter. Unfortunately, it's not a beast. If Master's Call said, like, draw 3 beasts, I think Houndmaster would 100% be seeing play. I think it would be one of the strongest cards in that deck. I think Houndmaster is... Like you can play Savannah High Main in mid-range Hunter right now, and it's not seeing very much play there. If Houndmaster was able to see play in it, it would be 100%. So I think Houndmaster, for me, is the strongest one.
It's fair.
Nikolaus, you make a very convincing argument. I think I'm leaning towards Shaw as well, but I
not Shaw, just Houndmaster.
A case can be made for all three of these cards. So definitely, sorry, to be clear, look out for the poll question. And give us your feedback. There is an other option, so if there's a card we've completely missed on, definitely let us know what that is, and we'll bring it to the group next week, and we'll talk about it.
Yeah, sorry, to be clear, I'm not talking about Houndmaster Shaw. I am talking about Houndmaster, the basic card.
Oh, the original Houndmaster.
I am talking about +2/+2 and taunt.
Yeah. It's...
Disgusting. So we all picked a different one then. See, that shows that all three of these cards are strong, and they could and should probably see play, but they're not right now. That's how good they are.
Yeah,
for sure.
Actually, that speaks to how good Master's Call probably is.
Yeah,
that is definitely one thing.
Because two of them can't be played with Master's Call, otherwise you lose the bonus of drawing all three.
Yeah. Three mana draw three, I think we've seen to be absolutely insane, not only with this, but also with other cards like Raiding Party, which had to be nerfed from Rogue.
Oh, yeah. So, all right, Nicolas, you want to tell everyone where they can find you on Twitter and whatnot?
Yeah, I'm at Nicolas123 on Twitter. I'm also on Game Sensei. And if you want to talk to me on Discord, I'm in our Doctor 3 channel, as well as on Coin Concede.
Mage?
Find me Monday, Wednesday, Friday on Twitch. It's twitch.tv/MageDeath. I'm also on Twitter at MageDeath there as well. On a lot of Hearthstone Discords, including the Doctor 3 Discord. So just message me and I'll respond as quickly as I can.
You can contact the show on Twitter at Dr3HS. You can email us at Dr3HS@gmail.com. And you can find me on Twitter at Daring Alkaline. So that's going to do it for us this week. Next week, we decide we're coming back with, and I just forget it. It was Mage. Mage of Death, Mage. Yep. So, Dr. 3 guys, signing off.
Boom.
Boom.